We've had the gospel several times lately, so I won't read it in English for you today. You know very well the parable of the wise and foolish virgins, and I would note that a great celebration, a banquet, takes place, a nuptial banquet in this case, which of course has eschatological overtones. It's the eschatological feast of heaven in the sight of God. But today, in these United States at least, we are celebrating a day having to do with Thanksgiving. I noticed in the chat comments before Mass, one of you mentioned that this is the 400th anniversary of that first Thanksgiving Day meal, held by a people who were in a new place because of religious persecution. We too are now in a new place, in a way, because of religious persecution. There's the religious persecution that we experience from outside the church, and then there's the religious persecution that we experience inside the church. It's a kind of a subtle, well, sometimes not so subtle, as in the case of a certain document that would restrict the use of the traditional liturgy. It was an unfathomable thing to do, very difficult to describe both its thoughtlessness and its cruelty. Its cruelty is only matched, I think, by its thoughtlessness. In any event, it's a kind of a religious persecution, and it's coming from the inside. Now, how we deal with these things, being, shall we say, alone in the periphery, in a faraway place than that which we are used to or have come from, and into this place now. How did we get here, and what are we doing here, and so forth? Well, one of the first things that we have to do is give thanks. Thanksgiving is the very essence of the word Eucharistia, Eucharist, and so it defines who we are as a Christian people, as Catholics. Our willingness always to give thanks, no matter what our situation is something that is borne witness to also by those who have suffered not just subtle forms of persecution, but also bloody persecution as well, such as the saint whose day we celebrate today. Today we celebrate the feast of Catherine of Alexandria, who, when she was martyred, she was only 14 years old. And it was the 4th century, and it was the time of the Emperor Maxentius. She became hugely popular during the Middle Ages. She is one of the voices, for example, that Joan of Arc hears, along with Saint Margaret. Whenever I hear that pairing together, Catherine and Margaret, often put together because they are also among the auxiliary saints, the 14 holy helper saints, for example. You can look them up if you don't know about them. Look up the 14 holy helpers sometime. Anyway, Margaret and Catherine, there's a fantastic panel of tempera with gold on wood in the Boston Museum of Art by Barna da Siena, and it depicts the mystical marriage of Catherine of Alexandria with the Lord. But in the bottom are scenes from the life of Margaret. And one of them, she's got the devil, she's grabbed a hold of the devil by a horn, one of his horns, and he's kind of on the ground with his arm up to defend himself, and she's beating him with a hammer. And she has this placid look of joy on her face, concentrated joy, and she's beating the devil with a hammer. And I was just, anyway, just whenever I think of Margaret, I think of that. Anyway, Catherine of Alexandria, what did she do? Well, she went to the Emperor Maxentius. She went to the Emperor Maxentius to rebuke him for his cruelty. And so he, what did he do? He responded by getting together a whole bunch of philosophers to debate with her. Well, this suggests that she had some status in the world. You know, she wasn't just some, you know, peasant girl walking in off the street. She had some chops. She probably belonged to an extremely important family that couldn't be, you know, insulted or whatever. Anyway, she was a lofty position of some sort. So he made her debate with some philosophers, and she wound up converting many of them. And so for winning, he condemned her to be tortured in prison, and she endured terrible tortures. And then he changed track, because if there's anything that's going to open a young girl's heart to an older man, it's physical torture and threats. And so he then proposed to her, and of course she refused. And when she refused, he condemned her to death by being wheeled. Well, she's usually depicted with a wheel in her iconography, sometimes a sword, because the wheel didn't work. When she touched the wheel, it broke, which later on came to be, in later times, later centuries. Okay, and they, you know, they did this. The last wheeling, execution, I think, was in the 1800s. I mean, this is one of the most savage, one of the most horribly cruel ways to kill a person you could ever imagine. Anyway, she eventually had to be beheaded, because when they touched her with a wheel, the wheel broke, and that later on came to be a sign that if, you know, if the wheel breaks, then, well, maybe the person is innocent. Well, because that's logical, huh? Anyway, she came to be beheaded. And so she joins the ranks of great saints like Margaret and Barbara and Agnes and Lucy and so forth. Now, I mentioned this mystical marriage business. There's another Catherine of the 14th century who also went to rebuke someone. She went to rebuke a pope. She went to rebuke an Aventine, one of the Avignon popes. So there's a parallel there. And also, she experienced what is called the mystical marriage. Now, mystical marriage is something that's described. I can't go into too much detail here because I'm going on. But Teresa and John of the Cross describe the mystical marriage as the most exalted condition possible in the spiritual life, and it comes from a habitual vision of the Trinity or some other vision of some other divine attribute. And it's such a close and such an intimate bond between the soul that it's described as a woman coming before Mary and the Lord, in some instances depicted as a grown man, very often depicted as an infant in Mary's lap. And the saint extending her hand toward the Lord, and him putting a wedding ring on her finger, as if the bond between them is so intimate, it's like a mystical marriage. And so Catherine of Alexandria and Catherine of Siena, 1,000 years later, are both depicted in this way. And you can take a look online to see what a little bit more about that. Try to find the painting by Barna da Siena, and try to find, look up a little bit more about wheeling and a little bit more about that interesting phenomenon called the mystical marriage. The last point is that, you know, the issue of the wedding ring. In Italian, the wedding ring is nicknamed la fede. It's your faith. It's an outward sign to the whole world, to your spouse and to yourself, but to the outward world, of what your state is, of what you're committed to. It's la fede, it's your faith. You would no more give that up than you would give up your life. And so it's a way of bearing witness. It's a way of kind of a martyrdom, because the stated life requires sacrifice, the sacrifice of one's own desires very often, but always for the good of the other, and always for the sake of helping your spouse get to heaven. And this is what we have to do. We have to help each other get to heaven. And therefore, I express to you my deepest thanks to anybody who is listening to this. I hope to help you get to heaven. And those of you who have reached out for me or been in contact with me in some way, reacting to these, have been of help to me. And I'm also so very grateful to my benefactors. I am so very grateful, so thankful for my benefactors that it gives me delight to celebrate Holy Mass for them often, which I'm able to do right now and which I'm doing right now. Dominus obisum, oremus. Apparentione divigine sposea, proximeus apparentu tibi in letizia, in exultazione, traducentur in tempum rei di Domino.